afternoon, and welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Scott Greeson. I'm the executive director of Friends of the Eel River. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU. It's brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, the publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the Eco News. And don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. This week, I want to start in on what I hope is going to be an extended conversation about one of the most difficult and important environmental issues facing the North Coast, which has been very much in the headlines recent months, and that's the environmental impacts of the marijuana industry. Today's guest in the studio here at KHSU is Tony Salvaggio. Dr. Salvaggio is a lecturer in the Department of Sociology. He also is a faculty member in the Environment and Community Master's Program at Humboldt State. He's a specialist in social movements and is putting together a symposium that will be held here at Humboldt State on Friday, October the 12th in the afternoon. We'll be talking about that, as well as a speakers series on the environmental impacts and other aspects of the marijuana economy in Humboldt State under the auspices of the new Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research. First off, welcome to the show, Tony. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
And maybe you could just tell us a little bit about the new research institute I was just describing, the Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research, and where that's coming from and what you're up to with that.
The institute was created in the spring of last year for a number of reasons. Our university is located in the Emerald Triangle. As we know, it's a region of California known for producing, harvesting, and processing marijuana, and lots of practices associated with these activities, and the impacts of these activities on the economy, on social services, on the education, and on the environment, as well as the workforce, are written about a lot, talked about a lot in Humboldt County, but there's actually little data on these activities and the impacts. So for these reasons, Humboldt State University has decided to create this institute. And it's intended to be a statewide center of policy and research on marijuana. And a hope of the institute is for it to become a model for the development of other marijuana-related university-based centers across the nation. And our intention right now, we've just started last spring, so our intention is for us to become the leading resource for the dissemination of marijuana research for folks like health professionals, academics, policymakers, businesses, educators, and community organizations.
Yeah. So you're not an institute devoted to growing more high-quality marijuana. We're talking about looking at these larger impacts and how the industry affects the society it's embedded in.
Correct. And we want to make that very clear that we're not an advocacy organization. We will comply with all federal, state, and local ordinances, laws, and regulations. So back to the sort of the interest. I mean, the interest is really
right
in response to this growing concern with the social health, environmental health, and all the other sort of aspects around medicinal and recreational marijuana production and consumption. And our goal is really to rigorously promote scientific and scholarly studies around this topic of marijuana, as well as collaborations with other researchers and institutes and policymakers, and basically to serve as a clearinghouse for marijuana research. We don't have anything like that right now. Mm-hmm. And being in the Emerald Triangle, we are, many of us consider to be, this is the best place to be doing it because this is the heart of marijuana culture in the United States. So it just makes sense that we have it here.
As you noted, it's notoriously difficult to pin down even some of the basic facts about the industry, about the size of the economy. We don't even know roughly how much marijuana is grown in Humboldt County or the Emerald Triangle writ large. There have been some interesting estimates of the net financial impact of the industry, but they have pretty large error bars around them. And I mean, let's get into talking a little bit about the environmental impacts associated with marijuana cultivation. We know, for example, there are clearly a fairly large number of unrecorded water diversions that are used to irrigate marijuana crops. What we don't know is the extent to which these diversions are responsible for example, the very low flows we're seeing right now in mid-September through early October in a lot of our creeks and even in rivers like the South Fork Eel River, which is running pretty darn low. You know, What's your thinking as a social scientist about how we can best improve our understanding of impacts like these, and others?
My thoughts as a sociologist, and also I'm an environmental sociologist. That's my main sort of focus of the last five, six years. And when I began studying this topic in 2005, the environmental impacts, I found no peer-reviewed studies in any discipline that really looked at this topic. Right? So the data, in terms of academic data, was really non-existent. What we did find is the National Drug Intelligence Center had some studies on paraquat and other eradication of, say, for example, coca plants. But in 2005, we didn't really have anything being done in that realm. And still today, very little. I mean, Murad's research, as we'll talk about, is one, but there's only a handful. So what we know for folks listening, this is what we know, and I want folks to think about, who are listening, think about scale right now. So what the government tells us, and the DEA is primarily what we look for these answers, they had, in 2010, record-breaking seizures nationwide. So they uprooted 10,329,000 cannabis plants nationally, and that is what they found. The lion's share of that, 7,392,000, were taken right here in California. So 2010, you're thinking 7 million plants, according to the DEA's annual report. That's what we know. And again, much of that, 70% of that, public lands.
Right.
So we're not even tapping into the private lands issue. So I don't have the numbers yet for public-private breakdown of the 2010-11, but consider that in 2008 we had 2 million plants on public lands, and the numbers have gone up since 2008. So how much has grown? Certainly more than 7 million plants, and that's not including indoor.
Right.
And that's scale.
So what about the financial side? Just briefly, what do we know as a big picture?
So a recent report done by a medical marijuana trade group, so it's a trade group, take it with a grain of salt, says that sales of medical marijuana nationwide, and this is only medical marijuana, we're not talking about illegally produced and sold marijuana, was over $1.7 billion. And that is the legal stuff on the street in the States for medical. Put that into context, Pfizer reaps about $2 billion annually for slinging Viagra. So here we have a huge industry here economically. Our own Justice Department says that marijuana is the state's biggest cash crop. It's worth as much as $14 billion annually, and that was the 2009 number that I have in my research. So, with the price fluctuation, I would say it's not much more, but it's certainly not much less.
You're listening to the Eco News Report. I'm Scott Greeson with the Friends of the Eel River, and I'm here in the studio with Tony Salvaggio, PhD lecturer in the Department of Sociology and the Environment and Community Master's Program. We're talking about how we can better understand the impacts of the Emerald Triangle's marijuana industry, including its environmental impacts. Tony, you mentioned the work of Murad Gabriel, who's the researcher who's been in the news quite a bit. He's documented the impact of the use of anticoagulant rodenticides in a number of instances that have clearly, he's proven, led to the death of critically imperiled Pacific fishers and, by inference, a fairly large amount of other wildlife in the wildlands of both Northern California and the Sierra Nevadas. Dr. Gabriel, or he's a doctoral candidate, I guess, is one of the folks you have scheduled to speak in the Marijuana Research Speakers Series. Can you just tell us a little bit about the speaker series?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. This is our first annual speaker series. We're going to be doing this every year with the Institute. And again, our goal is to improve our economic, social, and sort of environmental understanding of what's going on here with the marijuana industry, or what I call the marijuana industrial complex. And Murad is going to be coming and talking again about that in October. Murad's research is in a way groundbreaking because, as I mentioned earlier, there were absolutely no peer review studies of the impact of this industry on ecosystems, critters, and human health. And his research has pretty much opened up a huge new area of research, more interest, I would say, like in that he's provided empirical evidence to show that this industry or these toxicants are actually impacting wildlife.
And a particularly compelling species.
Yes, a very much a threatened.
Furry, endangered, cute as buttons. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So his research is really, I think, opening up awareness, I guess, amongst the academic community, especially the natural and the biological sciences, that, hey, this stuff is important and relevant.
But it's also attracted a lot of attention from policymakers and law enforcement.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And part of it, too, is because there's very little research on this. And that's part of our intention for this institute, is really to get people to start thinking about research projects so we can understand more about this industry, which is, as I mentioned earlier, economically incredibly important, all right, as well as, you know, important for other various reasons.
So when is Murad Gabriel's discussion going to be?
So Murad is going to be speaking Monday, October 29th.
That's here at Humboldt State.
Correct. It's going to be at Humboldt State at the BSS Forum. That's room 162. And that's going to be at 5:30 to around 7 o'clock at the BSS Native Forum. Prior to that, we're going to be having another researcher. And this is a fellow named Dr. Dominic Korva. He's a visiting assistant professor in public policy from Sarah Lawrence College.
And his talk will be October 8th.
Yes, correct. Monday, October 8th. And his current research is on the political economy of policing cannabis agriculture in Southern Humboldt. So that's what his topic is going to be. The presentation is titled Requiem for a Camp, Postmortem for a Drug War Institution. It's a really great title. And he's going to be talking about the life and death of California's campaign against marijuana planting from 1983 to 2012. So I think, you know, he really offers us a unique analytic window into the time and space element of the U.S. war on drugs in a global context, and then talks to us about how it affects us here, Southern Humboldt, Northern Humboldt, the Emerald Triangle.
And what time is that talk going to be?
That's going to be at 5:30 also to 7 p.m.
So Dominic Korva. That's Monday, October 8th at 5:30 at the Behavioral and Social Sciences Native Forum here at Humboldt State University. And there'll be more information about all of these talks posted probably on the web, certainly in the local papers. Stay tuned. So the next thing we want to talk about in terms of this whole bunch of information coming our way about the impacts of Humboldt County and the Emerald Triangle's marijuana industry is the symposium that the Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research is helping to sponsor. This will be Friday, October 12th, during the afternoon from 1 to 5. There'll be two sessions, one on the problem and responses, environmental impacts and politics of cannabis agriculture, and the second on sustainability, basically, environmental, cultural, and economic futures. Tell us a little bit about where this is coming from, what you hope can be accomplished with this symposium.
Yeah.
Some of the speakers.
Yeah, last semester, I want to say, if time goes by so fast, I think it was in March or April, I hosted a symposium on the ecological impacts of marijuana cultivation and had a number of guests and policymakers present research on kind of what we know out there. And as a result of that, it was a pretty good turnout, people very interested in learning more. After the first symposium, my intention was to have a second symposium made up of not so much policymakers and academics, but mostly community organizations, in order to have a conversation about solutions, right? And understand actually what is going on, to get a more comprehensive overview of what impacts are out there that we know about. What are the current policies or proposed policies that are in place that attempt to deal with these environmental impacts? And then what are the potential solutions and futures around this particular issue? So this symposium was, the seeds were planted after the first discussion last spring. So that's sort of the focus of it. And it's basically going to gather grassroots environmental activists, community members, and policymakers to discuss these impacts more comprehensively, and also look at the opportunities and the challenges that we face in addressing these particular problems.
So who's coming? Who are some of the panelists?
So the panelists for this symposium range from policymakers to community activists to nonprofit organization members. And I can list them off. You're one of them, my friend, as well as Gary Hughes from the Environmental Protection Information Center, Tasha McKee, Executive Director of Sanctuary Forest. Mark Lovelace is the Humboldt County District 3 Supervisor. He's going to attend, as well as Paul Gallegos, the Humboldt County District Attorney, and Mike Downey, the Humboldt County Sheriff. Casey O'Neill and Kyle Keegan, both community members, will also take part in this discussion. So those are the panelists that we have so far.
I think we've also got Scott Downey from the California Department of Fish and Game confirmed.
Yes, that's true. I see that on the list. Scott Downey, correct. Sorry about
that. I say that's fairly significant. I'm hoping to have Scott Downey on this show next week, so we may have some more information coming to the radio waves through this program.
And one more that I forgot. It was on the other page of my notes here. Hezekiah Allen, the executive director of the Mattole Restoration Council, is also going to be taking part.
So that's a pretty serious list of folks to look at these issues. Is this intended to be for the university audience? Is it for the public? Who do you see being interested in this?
I think my intention when I originally sort of was brainstorming this idea was to have it a mix of both community activists and organizations that are working on this, policymakers, and then academics in terms of attendance, if you will, as well as other folks interested. This is for everyone, I would say. My intention when thinking about this second symposium was to have a community discussion, not just focus solely on academics or policymakers.
So let's talk about the title just for a second. You've titled the symposium "The Environmental Challenges of Marijuana Agriculture in the Age of Prohibition." Mm-hmm. Let's just unpack that for a second. What's the age of prohibition? Why is that important to the title?
I think when trying to understand the root causes of environmental degradation around this particular issue, marijuana cultivation, we have to look at why we see these problems in the woods, why we see these problems in our forests and in our environments. And I think we have to be honest with ourselves, and we would not see these problems if it weren't for a particular federal policy of prohibition. So having that in the title is important because I think from my perspective, having an understanding that prohibition has an impact on the practices, the scale, as well as the research, if you will, on this topic. So we've included that in the title for that reason. It's a very important piece in understanding the environmental impacts of this particular industry. And to leave it out would be, you know, not really being honest, I think, about where we're at right now.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Eco News Report. I'm Scott Greeson, hosting this week, the director of Friends of the Eel River. I have Dr. Tony Silvaggio in the studio with me. He's a lecturer in the Department of Sociology and in the Environment and Community Master's Program here at Humboldt State University. We're talking about grappling with the environmental and social impacts of the Emerald Triangle's marijuana industry. And there are a series of events coming up at Humboldt State. Monday, October 8th, Dominic Corvo will be presenting on the history of CAMP, the Campaign Against Marijuana Production. On Friday, October 12th, from 1 to 5, will be the symposium we've just been discussing, Environmental Challenges of Marijuana Agriculture in the Age of Prohibition, which we'll probably have more to talk about. And then there'll be a series of six other speakers, starting with Murad Gabriel on, I believe, October
29th.
29th.
Monday,
and then
October 29th.
A series of additional speakers in 2013 as we go forward. Tony, we've talked a bit about the difficulty of getting good data. You know, how do we get good data even on how much marijuana is produced, how much it's worth? But then another place where we don't have much reliable information is about the actual attitudes and knowledge and beliefs of people involved in the industry. And I guess we probably should start by saying there are obviously a lot of different kinds of people involved and a lot of different kinds of operations involved in the marijuana industry. As you look at this set of questions, what do you see being the most important questions to ask, and how do we go about getting good data? You know, it seems like public opinion is one set of questions. Another is sort of what's going on in the growing communities.
I think one of the first things we need to do is we need to, again, I'm going to go back to this issue on prohibition, is basically acknowledge the fact that we wouldn't be sitting here talking about this right now if we did not have prohibition. So I think we have to just start from there. That said, recognizing that the federal government is not going to change anything in the next couple years, that certain strategies need to be implemented to understand this problem a little bit more.
Part of what I was trying to get at with that question is, for example, Prop 19 would have legalized marijuana for most uses in California. As I understand it, it was narrowly defeated in the state. It was narrowly defeated in southern Humboldt County. One can only assume that that was for different reasons than the statewide vote. You know, we don't have a whole lot more information than that, but that fact alone is an interesting piece of data, that a portion of the county that clearly is fairly heavily involved in marijuana production voted against legalizing the product. Another piece of information is a recent poll we've got from May of 2012 by the Mason-Dixon polling firm, which, if I could summarize, reports that people asked whether the federal government should respect state-level medical marijuana laws or use federal resources to arrest and prosecute people who act in compliance with state medical marijuana laws, produced results of, across the board, 74% of all respondents supporting leaving the states alone, essentially respecting the state laws. And even among Republicans, we're talking 67%. Independents were 79% across all age classes, all ethnic groups. Very broad support for a position that seems, well, kind of the opposite of the federal policy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, looking at these studies on attitudes, behaviors, and perceptions that we do in the social sciences, this is pretty consistent over the last decade, these results. I mean, this is really, that's overwhelming support for states' rights on this particular issue. So what we're seeing is we're seeing a trend now nationally for more of a soft sort of touch policy when we're dealing with enforcement of medical marijuana and particular dispensaries amongst the general public. But the opposite in terms of law enforcement, as we see with the raids on these dispensaries. This is part of what we need to be doing as an institute and as researchers, is we need to be conducting more of this type of research to get an understanding of what are the values of the folks in the United States, and why was it that folks in Southern Humboldt actually, the majority voted against that proposition. So understanding that, I mean, as a social scientist, these are the areas where we can come in and try to help answer some of those questions. And as I stated earlier, there's been very little research, you know, done other than some of this polling data. And for various reasons. One is the stigma of just doing marijuana-related research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is really, I think, been an obstacle for academics, is to really overcome that obstacle and that stigma that says if you do marijuana research, it's in a way not only advocating for marijuana, but also it's a not legitimate study. It's in a way a joke.
Right.
So I think overcoming that stigma. The other thing is academics are always behind the curve. We're always behind the curve on these things. Rarely, if ever, are we able to predict certain things. So I think that's another reason why we don't know a lot about these topics around the industry.
Well, let's try to bring this back around to the environmental impacts, because it's my contention that a big part of our inability to address these environmental impacts, whether we're talking about rodenticide use in remote wilderness areas or water diversions on homesteads, you know, some of the other issues we've identified in terms of pesticide use and or just the use of inappropriate amounts of fertilizer, are made much, much more difficult to address by the culture of secrecy, the amount of fear involved in an industry that is illegal, fundamentally. And that's a huge barrier to having these discussions with people and to actually making the kinds of changes that will effectively protect resources like endangered fishers and endangered fish. So, I mean, a lot of the question looming over all of us, I think, is where do we go from here? Are we looking at trying to figure out how to do more effective enforcement, more effective education, more effective mitigation, all of the above? And we're looking to you guys to help guide us, I think.
Well, one of the things you point out that I think we've recognized is this code of silence that has sort of dominated the community, if you will, over the last decade around this issue, this fear of actually speaking up around some of the practices of industrial marijuana agriculture in the rural communities, and recognizing that's one of the reasons why we know so little, one of the many reasons why we know so little, because of the code of silence,
right,
that secrecy and the fear, right? I think people are now recognizing that this is an issue that needs to be brought into the open. It's an issue that is in a way, not talking about it is counterproductive to all the efforts that the environmental community is putting in to restore these habitats.
Right.
And I think that's a real important point to make. And I think there's more of an awareness, you know, and part of what at least myself as an academic, as an environmental sociologist is trying to do is to get this stuff out in the public more, right? And also to get academics interested, primarily biological and the natural sciences folks, to get them interested in studying these things. You know, Marad is a unique character. You know, he's studying this stuff. There's very few other folks really tapping into this. And I'll give a case in point. You know, we have a lot of folks that do studies on the ecological footprint of this office here at Humboldt State University. What's right. The ecological footprint? We know a lot of that. There's tons of research being done in eco-footprints of society, industrial society. But we don't know the eco-footprint of the industry here in our backyard. We have no idea of the ecological footprint. And it's relevant, it's valid, and it needs to be addressed. And again, we don't have time to wait for this. The critters don't have time to wait. So I think if we try through this institute and through some of these symposiums to really create interest in and let folks know this stuff is really critical for all the other work that environmental groups are doing throughout the region, you know, as well as the policymakers, Fish and Game, the work they're doing is directly connected, you know, to this issue. And in many ways, you know, what's happening out there, the industrial agricultural practices are damaging each of those attempts to mitigate those impacts, say, from logging and whatnot. So, you know, we're going to be working in the next year on generating that interest. And part of it, too, is that funding. As you know, as most community organizations know, you know, funding is necessary to get work done. And when there's no interest, when there's no institutional support, when there's no funding, there's no interest, basically.
Right.
So what we also need to do is cultivate sort of an institutional sort of culture that we need to fund this stuff in the natural and social sciences. So that's, again, another sort of part of the mission for this institute is to recognize that.
We need to wrap this up. Is there any final point you'd like to make?
Just a couple other things here about what we can do and what the data gaps that we see exist. And one of those are the data gaps around law enforcement. And I think what we need to do is we need to find what information they have. You know, they're out there in both public and private lands eradicating marijuana. And we need them to collect more data, and we need them to also release more data to us so we know the impacts. Part of that, too, is a bit of funding. They need some money, too, right, to actually get that data. So here again, it's the institutional supports that are necessary for us really to come to an understanding of what's going on out there. And these symposiums, the work that many of these environmental organizations do and these policymakers do is hopefully going to help us get there sooner than later.
Okay, this has been the Eco News Report. My name is Scott Greeson. I've been your host for the past half hour. My guest today has been Dr. Tony Salvaggio. Thanks again, Tony. Really appreciate your work.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org. These programs are archived there for 2 weeks after they air. Thereafter, you can usually find the files from recent shows posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. You can find Friends of the Eel River, the organization I work for, at eelriver.org. If you have questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. It would not happen without Fred McLaughlin doing the engineering. Thank you, Fred. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU for the Eco News Report.